Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt, your favorite World War II-based podcast. I was going to say the first episode in 2026 before I finished my opening little tagline, but welcome to the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. There we go. I got to get the word podcast in there. It just doesn't feel quite right. We're talking about not feeling quite right. It hasn't felt quite right that three of us haven't been together in at least a couple of months now because of holidays and whatnot. What's going on, fellas?
Man, it has been too long, but it's a good way to start off 2026, man. We got a lot to talk about.
I was thinking about this the other day. 2026. We started in 2018.
Wow.
Been doing this a bit.
You guys been at it a while.
Well, you've been at it. See, that's the funny thing, too, because when you do this stuff, we do so many of them, we forget. Dennis, you've been around here for quite a handful of these, too, now. You're well past 30, 40 episodes, I would imagine. Probably 30. I mean, we're at the 200 and something. You've been around here for quite a clip yourself. So it happens quickly, because I remember we'd often forget how early on Jeff jumped into this, right? He's been around here for damn near probably season 2-ish. He's been here since the early days. And so, yeah, we are chugging along and we're going to get together next month. But real quick, I was reading a manuscript and I came across a date that confused me, which led me to some research. So, Jeff, you're familiar with the George F. Eliot?
Not much of a Navy guy, but okay, go ahead.
The George F. Eliot was the ship that brought the 1st Infantry Marine Corps Division to Guadalcanal on August 7th and sank on August 8th. Sound familiar now?
Well, yeah. Okay, where are we going?
Well, I was reading this manuscript, and one of the members of the Weslaco 8 was shipped out on the George F. Eliot in 1943. I'm like, well, how can that be?
Oh.
Everybody knows the damn thing sank on August 8th, 1940. Dennis, is it common practice to reuse vessel names?
Yeah, they would do that. It'd be definitely, but I would make a note to the author, and because that'd be definitely something he'll want to investigate further.
And the identifier is the big deal, because I you know, I've always heard of George F. Eliot getting sunk. So the USS George F. Eliot AP-13, that's the key indicator.
Right.
Ordered as a war haven of the British service and requested during construction, launched then commissioned by USS Victorious, ID 35514 in 1918, commercial vessel between the wars of Victorious Cities and Harve in 1931 and the city of Los Angeles in 1938, acquired by the Navy on October 30th, 1940, renamed George F. Eliot and recommissioned on 10th of January, 1941, sunk by the USS Hald DD-350 after sustaining heavy damage on August 8th, 1942. And then the George S. F. Eliot AP-105 launched, launched as a name I can't pronounce for the Delta Lines on 16th of December, 1939, acquired by the War Shipping Administration on April 12th, 1942 for the Navy operation and commissioned on September 23rd, 1943, and sold to the Faroe Lions of New York in 1948, and then renamed the African Endeavor. I don't know. I guess it just didn't occur to me that we would recycle names, because you would think that the names are associated to a vessel for historical purposes. So it just never occurred to me. Ah, that one sank, but we promised this guy's family that we'd have a boat named after him. So I'm not sure that's the reason either, but my cynical mind is. And so that's not an uncommon practice to reuse names on vessels.
No, that's not uncommon. They would do that. And and regarding this item, I would definitely let the author know.
Yeah.
Because that'd be a really cool footnote that he could
absolutely
put if he wants to know that this ship is actually named after one that was lost at Guadalcanal.
Yeah, especially one that particular name because of the association. You know, you read Guadalcanal diaries or you read any of Robert Leckie's stuff, you're going to be familiar with that ship name. And then you're like,
Cool.
Yeah, the number keeps popping into my head, 128, but I don't quote me, but it's something like the first 150 or so APs. If it was AP up to about that number, they were repurposed commercial liners that they transferred into troop transport ships like the Arthur Middleton or the Elliot. they weren't built specifically for the Navy. And it could be more than 150, but I want 128 comes into my mind for whatever reason. But I mean, you think about one of the more famous renamed ships, you think of all the way up to the aircraft carrier, CV-2 gets sunk, the Lexington, and
Yeah.
then CV-16, sends Hellcats into Tarawa for its first operation. And lasted up into the 1960s. So yeah, definitely not a uncommon thing, but it is, like you say, a pretty good point to point out that it probably should denote the difference between AP, what was it, AP 13, and then AP whatever,
105.
105. Yeah.
Now, have we gotten to the point in military history where a name becomes kind of like a jersey number after so many years? If it's so famous, that name is kind of retired. Obviously, if these two ships weren't named so close apart, do you think that they, 38 years later, would have used the same name after, the history of World War II and Guadalcanal kind of got big, or they just. Because obviously, like a USS Arizona, for example, I don't know what. Did they ever recycle that name?
Well, we don't have any battleships.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
No, but we've always had an Enterprise.
Yeah,
I think
this
as
is the
long as
future.
the Navy has been around, there has been an Enterprise.
Gotcha.
So
That's
that's
cool.
200 years, man.
See that? We learned something here today.
Yeah.
So what's been going on with the COG there, fellas? I've been seeing a lot of the social media work and some great production value and information getting out there, and how's that project going?
Well, basically, we've just been whipping Dennis like a dog to work so hard for COG. He, well, it takes a village, it really does, and we're seeing it, and I think Dennis would agree too, and I'll let him talk more about it, but we're starting to see the payoff, and we're starting to see, just some of the ramifications of, and maybe that's not the right word, but when two guys have something in mind and a vision, and not unlike what you've done with WTSP, Don. I mean, you had a vision and you built something, and look at what you've done now. And it's moving. It's very moving. And it's very humbling to see something just start snowballing so quickly. What it was just at first a conversation becomes federally incorporated. But Dennis is really the perfect fit for his role, and has really kind of been the backbone of what we've been doing, and it's neat to see the team grow, and it's very exciting to see what 2026 is going to hold for COG for sure.
Awesome. I'm excited for you guys. Anything you want to add to that, Dennis, before we move on?
Well, I mean, goodness, we could do a whole episode on everything that's happened over the last couple months. But what's really awesome, Don, is that, this started because, and I think what Jeff was alluding to before was that all the decades of research that we've been doing and going to events and making contacts and having friends and making friends and making, relationships over the years. And you're always working for somebody else, though. You're always, it's always for another institution or another association. And so you're butting up against people that don't have the same vision, or they're tired, or they don't want to do it. This seems like a crazy idea.
Burnout's a
And
huge problem.
yeah, Jeff and I would be sitting in the back, and actually those are some of my fondest memories of the last couple of years, is sitting in the back of his yard there, and we'd be sitting at the campfire there, the burn pit, and we would smoking cigars and just talking about our ideas of if we had a nonprofit, what we would want to do with it. And it just so happened that by chance, we had on Andrew Boor, the What's the Co-8 story, and then he showed that photograph. And that started this whole journey, was my curiosity about that stone pediment that was to the right of those young men. And that led to introductions to the building owner. And from that point on, When I got with Mr. Siderley, he says, "What do you want to do with this information?" Mr. Siderley being the owner of this building where the Weslaco men were inducted and took their famous rooftop oath. "What do you want to do with it?" I says, "Well, sir," I says, "I'm concerned that this was almost lost to history. Like you own the building. It's been generationally passed to you, and you didn't even know this happened here. You had no idea that the entire sixth floor, your business offices, were used by the Marine Corps for induction of thousands of young men going into the Marines in World War II." I said, "We need to make sure this never happens again. We never almost lose this history." So I says, "We need to put a plaque up there." And he says, "That sounds great. Let's do it." Well, then we met for lunch. And this is a really good lesson on why face to face with people is so important. And this is something that Jeff and I are really good at if we can get face to face with somebody. And Mr. Siderley met me for lunch and he said, "Oh, Dennis, it's too bad you don't have a nonprofit, because then we could really have an awesome event." And then I was like, So, and then I,
How long would that
immediately,
take? You're like, how long would that take?
Exactly.
Dennis isn't the type of guy who says, who's going to do that? He's like, how long will that take?
That's exactly the conversation that Jeff and I had practically within 15 minutes of me leaving lunch with Mr. Siderley. I called Jeff. I'm like, "You're not going to believe this." And of course, Jeff is like, "Let's do this." And then we go to the event up in Dallas. And on the way back, it was like, how would we do it? And then it was by the time we got home to his house in Burnet, COG was basically the foundation was laid in that drive. It's a pretty awesome story.
It's basically like a prom date. COG was conceived in, the
Back of an
backseat of
old Buick.
the car.
How anybody who's ever been in a band, improv group, a podcast, what have you, how long did it take you guys to come up with a name? Because that's usually the hard thing. You get to the point where, like AC/DC, oh, that was the sticker on the back of old boy's sister's sewing machine. I mean, how long did that take to come up with? Who kind of came up with a general idea of it, and then how did you hammer that out?
I was asking Jeff what conserving, if conserving could be used in the way of preserving history. Like, we know about conservation, like, trees and land management and stuff like that. Could it be used as a preservation of history? And he says, "We're like the conservators of the greatest generation, it's like we're," and then so I told him, I says, "Wait a minute, I think you just named it." I says, "I think, Jeff, I think you just, that's how it went down." I says, "I think you just named it." And I says, and look at the initials, like, for marketing. Oh my gosh.
Like cog, cog,
Well, I don't know
cog.
if you guys kind of thought about this either, because one of your plans with this organization is to help small museums stay up and running, get some angles and some ideas. And, Dennis and I are kind of loosely talking about, how you guys want to kind of help bring attention to museums, correct? Well, I'm not speaking out of turn, right? Well,
Yeah, that's correct.
if all
That's
that's a
one of the thoughts.
machine, if all that's a machine and you guys are just a small contributor to that, you're the cog in that machine of helping to keep all that going too. So it's
That's
kind of
right.
cool.
That's right. And and we were talking on the drive back, like, we were even thinking about marketing. Like, how awesome is it for marketing to have a meeting called that you get to present to an organization, and you pull up your presentation, and you have a swoops in a cog that is Medina Valley Historical Society. Boom. And then you have in, Hudson Valley Library, Oral History Project. Boom. And then
Latif.
you have come in here the Historical Society of World War II Landing Craft. Boom, right here, right? And then you have this missing peg, this missing a cog, right? And you say, let's engage the gears, and you click that, but nothing moves. And then you look at the sponsors and you say, because your cog is missing. And then all of a sudden, Frostbank's cog comes in, or whatever, some philanthropist, or this cog comes in, and you click that, and that turns, and it causes everything else to start turning. And this amazing visual of a tread, like a machinery of war, or a home
Tank.
front, or a tank. Yep, exactly. It's freaking beautiful.
I just had a thought when you were talking about the episode where we had Andrew on and the photo. Two times now with this particular photo, this combat, Harlem Block, two times now history has been affected by someone noticing something in a photo.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You in the photo of them, and then what was it, 7 years ago now, when the gentleman was having like his kidney surgery or whatever, and he was laid up in bed, that he noticed some of the differences in the photos, and they kind of tracked down the diff, the inconsistencies on the history of the flag raising. Wasn't that started because somebody noticed something in a photo?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it was, when during the filming of Flags of Our Fathers, when it first started being shed some light on what they were wearing, because they wanted to get it right. And it why does the corpsman have wire cutters? And I think that's when, because the wire cutter, pouch is so obvious on the right thigh there, that's supposed to be John Bradley. And like, wait a minute, this guy's not wearing any kind of medical gear, unit three gear, anything like that. So then it kind of started that ball rolling, and the Marine Corps, I think, has had to fix it twice now, identifying correctly the Marines in the photo, that and Bradley's not even in that photo. He raised the first flag, but so yeah, you're right. It just takes a little, let's look at this, even though we've seen it a million times. When you analyze something, or you see things from a different perspective, which is what makes history so great, because history is not a fixed entity. It's not. It's seen through so many different lenses. So, when you just see these guys on the hill, and it makes sense, and they sent these guys home, and okay, this is what it is. We accepted it. And then all of a sudden, we looked at it through the lens of a military advisor, a costume designer for Hollywood, going, wait, well, then why is that guy wearing that? And how did that happen? So
It's so
it changes
crazy.
things.
It's so crazy because this isn't the first time that that photo has been scrutinized. Because
Right.
if you guys have seen my drone video of our Iwo Jima flag raising statue here in Cape Coral, which is made from the secondary mold that Felix, what's his name? I can't remember his last name, Italian. He basically made a
Zawada.
small, yeah, he made a small, a medium, and then he made the original. Our statue was poured from that medium mold. And in my video, you can. Those wire cutters are there. So even Felix and his, whether he had military advisors, but I know he had real M1s and helmets, but even Felix noticed that they were there to the fact that he made them on the statue. And
Wow.
even when you, for what, 79 and a half years, people going down the Marine Corps, seeing the statue in real life, you can, the things, they're full size. They're probably even larger because of scale. They're probably 18 inches long, and no one's ever thought, why would a corpsman be wearing wire cutters? But it took, as Jeff said, someone staring at a photo saying, wait a minute. I guess maybe because everybody was just, I don't know, people, it was so close to the time then. And then, people just don't pay that much attention to the uniforms until some advisor or some living history guy takes it like, wait a minute. But yeah, two times now that this kind of storyline's had a little bit of a history update or change, based off of somebody noticing something in a photo and doing a little research. It's pretty cool.
It sure is.
Yeah.
Man.
What's up, everybody? Look, it's 2026. We're all still broke. We all need to save money. More importantly, we need to get cash back on the money we spend. That's why I suggest you using the Upside app. The Upside app was originally known for its gas reimbursement, if you will, right? You go to the gas station, you buy some gas, you upload your receipt, and you get cash back. Well, that's still the same thing, but they also include restaurants, stores, etc. Go out and buy your favorite tacos. Choose on the Upside app to claim that savings. Upload your receipt. In a day or two, you'll get $2 back or more, depending on how much money you spent on said tacos. So you can get cash back on gas, grass, and, well, yeah, anyhow, not that, but on gas, food, and much more. Check out the Upside app. You'll be happy that you did. And when you do, when you download the Upside app, and do me a favor, when you download the Upside app and it asks you for promo code, use the promo code digital9684. Once again, that's digital9684. That'll help us out here at the channel. Thanks again. You got to buy gas, you got to buy food, so why not get cash back on the money you spend? And when I say cash back, they do, in fact, put the cash back into your bank account. So check it out. Look in the App Store. That's Upside. And when you sign up and they ask you, type in digital9684. Thanks. So interesting news. I got an email from some service the other day, and I posted it on our Facebook page. We've kind of considered ourselves a lot of things, but we've never considered ourselves a war movie podcast. Now, I will say back in the day, as a lot of filler time, we would talk. You know what it is, Jeff? I think maybe they just heard a lot of our references to The Thin Red Line that they just like, oh, they're clearly a movie podcast, because that's kind of, we haven't hit it in a while. That's kind of been an inside joke on our podcast, the Thin Red Line. But anyhow, for those of you who aren't aware, this service called FeedSpot, they do surveys or whatever, and they organize, and they have us listed. I got an email saying, you know, you're in the top five war movie podcasts. Actually, we're number one. The What's the Scuttlebutt says, looking for war movie podcasters to listen to, an outreach for your campaign to promote your brand or product. Our war movie podcasters list is what you need. So this is also a marketing company where they're trying to get their list of podcasts out to companies like authors and what have you, to reach out to people like us. But yeah, we're number one, the What's the Scuttlebutt for war movie podcast. And so I thought, who knows, maybe someone will see that and they'll come listen to the latest episode and realize we haven't done any war movies in a long time. So for fun, and it's, you know, it's the New Year's and we're just getting up and running again. And I actually saw a World War II movie over the holidays, and I sent Jeff and Dennis a text saying, are you familiar with this group? And you guys said you were. So I have a movie I'll bring up. I don't know if you guys have seen one recently. I got to give a shout out to my daughter. She came in the room and I was in Netflix purgatory. Are you guys like me where you spend more time looking for something to watch than the actual amount of time you watch something? It's like, well, I've just looked for a movie for an hour and a half. I'm done. I'm going to go watch Roku. So I was in Netflix purgatory and she's like, hey, stop, watch that 6888. I'm like, huh? She's like, I started watching it the other day. And so I watched this movie, about the 6888. And I know you guys are familiar with them, correct?
Yes.
For those in the audience at home, the 6888 was a group of African American women who were put, now according to the movie, kind of as a proof that they would fail. But whether that's historically accurate or not, I don't know. But they were put in charge of organizing and untangling the mess, the logistical nightmare that was the postage mail system, to getting all the mail out to the guys on the front line in European theater. And we take things for granted, especially with email and, you know, the time we were growing up in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, the postal service is a well-oiled machine. Well, imagine trying to be a mailman today if the person you're delivering the mail to moves every 3 days, every week, right? And they're not in exactly places with well-defined postal codes and mailboxes. And so these ladies were put in charge of this monumental task. I mean, according to the movie, by the time they showed up, they had hangers, not a hanger, but hangers just full of letters. Some of them are outgoing mail, some of them are ingoing mail, some are written on an envelope on a rainy day with a pencil, and the address is smeared. Some of them have mud, blood, and everything else on it. And it goes into great detail of the efforts they went to. Like at a certain point, one of the ladies, you know, figured out, hey, this could be frowned upon, but, you know, it happens in war. If we actually open up some of these letters and get some more details because the addresses and the names are smeared on the envelopes. Maybe we can find the missing keys and put this thing together and get these mails delivered. And they were, I think they had like 90 days to sort this fiasco out because once again, they were basically set up to fail. But I'm just going to give you the synopsis of the movie. The Six Triple Eight is a 2024 American war drama written and directed by Tyler Perry on the 600, the 68th 88 Central Postal Directory Battalion, an all-black, all-female battalion in World War II. It's based on the article "Fighting a Two-Front War" by Kevin M. Heimel. The film features an ensemble cast. The Six Triple Eight had a limited theatrical release on December 6th of 2024 before airing on Netflix on December 20th. The film received mixed reviews, but from the critics. Its feature song, The Journey, was nominated for Best Original Song at the 97th Academy Awards. The film was nominated and won 5 awards at the 56th NAACP Image Awards, including Outstanding Motion Picture, and acting wins for Washington, Abstain, and Ensembled Cast. Here's the plot. A West Virginia mother waits daily for news from her two sons serving overseas while childhood friends Lena and Abram face difficulties of their budding romance because, you know, every war movie needs a romance side to it. In the 1940s Philadelphia, Abram, warned for deployment, promises Lena's mother he will come back to her house and court Lena properly after the war. Abrams is killed in action as a fighter pilot. The heartbroken Lena enlists after graduating school. She befriends other enlistees, and they train in Georgia, and they go overseas. The movie in itself is really good. If you're a uniform watcher, if you're a part of the problem being what we do, we kind of pick things apart. If you're going to go down that road, the set production was pretty well done. Obviously, Tyler Perry's a big production company. When it came to the uniforms, I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't have, you know, obviously I don't put together women's auxiliary corps and female enlistment uniforms. I will say on some of the wider shots, you can kind of tell that the costume designer was trying to find just as many error correct uniforms. And what I mean by that is some of them will have uniform A on, some of them will have uniform B on. And it's kind of like you have all these girls serving in the same platoon, same division, and they all kind of have hodgepodge uniforms, which very well may have happened. I'm just saying these are the kind of things you notice. And then there's a scene where they're at a camp and four gentlemen come over, and each one of them has a different variant of a World War II uniform on. A lot of Jeep caps. You can tell that maybe helmets were few and far between, even on the guys. Just, you know, we need covers on these guys. Jeep caps, here they are. So, I mean, you could probably nitpick some things when it comes to uniform, but the storyline was great. Once again, I never occurred to me, you know, we call our email mail call all the time, right? Mail call, and we read our emails, which, by the way, you can email us at mailcall at WTSPWorldWar2.com. But in all these years since 2018, we never did an episode on how the hell did the mail get there? Once again, it's just one of those things, you know, it's not the glamorous side, right? It's not the romantic aspect. There's so many things like this, the logistical side of war. You know, Jeff can tell you, it takes so many people on the back end to get, you know, the front end moving. And it's a very cool story. You know, you got your romance in there. Sat down and watched it with the old lady. She enjoyed it. The kid recommended it. I thought it was a great little story. Once again, it's a good way to get people interested in World War II, and it covers content that you never really give much thought about. So if you guys are interested, it's on Netflix. It's the 6888. I haven't looked at Rotten Tomatoes. I can imagine it maybe didn't get the best score in the world, but once again, it's for a modern day World War II movie. Learn about some subject matter that you probably haven't given much thought to. I was impressed with it. What's up, guys? As you all know, I am a huge bass kayak fishing fan. I love to bass fish from my kayak. And so if you're like me, when you first got into fishing, you started looking online for some bait casters, perhaps some spinning rods, spinning reels, and you got sticker shock. You could not believe how expensive this quality stuff is. And that's how I got turned on to Cast King. I started looking for high-end quality fishing equipment that people could afford. And that is Cast King's, that's their slug line, affordable fishing innovation. And they tell the truth. I enjoyed their fishing equipment so much that I went out and initiated contact with Cast King to become an ambassador. I have been an ambassador now for 2.5 years. I don't bring it up a lot. But hey, I just want to say to y'all, if you want to help support the show, you're looking for some quality fishing equipment, head over to WTSPWorldWar2.com/fish. Click on the link, check out the Cast King gear. You'll be happy you did. I'll get a little bit of thank you from Cast King. You're supporting the show. We're all happy. Thank you so much. Now on to the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many war movies that come to mind, and I was, even just talking with Tammy, like, hey, what are some that really have spoken to you over the years? You know, strictly World War II, right? We're not going to go into Platoon or anything like that, but it was funny. She said I could watch Saving Private Ryan over and over. I'm like, okay, I think right, like we all got that. It is probably one of the greatest war movies ever made. But she really enjoyed Hacksaw Ridge for one of the modern films. It's got a little bit of everything in it. And what I mean by that is, there's obviously the romance. So, but it doesn't take away from the story. It's the human side of things.
Yeah.
She says she always kind of gets emotional with it, knowing that it's a true story. And there's a lot of great movies that are made that aren't about true stories. That's great. But truth is, to me, 10 times better than any fiction or any, creativity of any writer, honestly, because for people who truly know the truth and know the past, it doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
So when you can blend those two things, I think you're doing pretty good. So that's definitely one that I enjoyed. Not everything about it. We know there's inaccuracies in the gear. We know that the violence mirrors that of like watching 300 or a modern video game.
Yeah.
It's a little over the top. But aside from that, I think I'm going to have to go with some of the classical ones. I'm going to stay away from series. But to stick with some of the best World War II films I think I've seen in my life, my top three are Sands of Iwo Jima, Memphis Belle, and Patton, for three very different reasons. And I won't go into all three, but I do want to say that growing up watching Sands of Iwo Jima, that movie is really one of the more important films that happened for the military, specifically for the Marine Corps. Because I think it was 1947, about 2 years after the war, the Marine Corps was being threatened as an individual branch by the National Security Act, and it started looking, the people behind keeping the Marine Corps as a separate entity, it was waning. The Second World War changed a lot of things. If we can send multiple army divisions into Europe, then what do we need an amphibious force for? If we could, field 22 divisions of the army in the Pacific, then what is the specialty of the Marine Corps at this point? Their specialty really truly was nothing special. They just did it with less money and worse equipment. and that's the heart of what the Marines can do. They adapt and improvise and overcome. But even if you're not a John Wayne fan, even if you know there's things about it that are hokey, as you might say, but it's a film, that was done in 1949, it probably really truly helped save the Marine Corps to keep it to where we know it as today. It blended some great actual footage, and it used some of the real people who were there. Lieutenant Harry Schreier, who raised the first flag, has conversation with John Wayne. In fact, I think he hands him the flag. The flag then gets handed from John Wayne to Bradley. And John Bradley, Gagnon, and Ira Hayes are the three that walk up to John Wayne to go put the flag up. And then, of course, the only living Medal of Honor recipient that came off of the island of Tarawa, Colonel Shoup, plays himself talking to Major Howe from the 8th Marines at Red Beach 3 at Tarawa. So they all play themselves, and I think that's a really cool way to do it, because I think that's what really helped, kind of pull on the heartstrings of the American public, who was absolutely tired of war in 1949, because they just lost 400,000 young men to fight it. So to me, that's one of the most important World War II movies made for so many reasons. And, I don't know if they still do it, but when my brother went through Marine Corps boot camp in the early 90s, they watched Sands of Iwo Jima at boot camp at Paris Island. So it's, It's definitely kind of a living legend as far as American cinema.
I was just pausing thinking of the how, we love these movies and how impactful they are, but sitting at a Marine Corps boot camp, living it, getting ready to make this your career, whether it's 4 years or longer, and then seeing that, and then when the credits roll, it's different than getting up and going in the kitchen to turn around and have your drill sergeant there ready to say any questions, and
Yeah, that's
you can
probably a different
basically
experience.
you can get the answers right from the source.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
How about you, Dennis? Any movies off the top of your head? Have you seen any recently or anything you want to suggest maybe someone who may have not seen it go out and check out?
I'm like Jeff. I gotta go back to the classics, man. Here with this program that Jeff and I are putting together for the Weslaco 8. I had to do some research on the guys, and I requested from their librarian of their high school, Weslaco High School. She sent me yearbooks from the high school from the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and links to them all. And looking at 1942, the yearbook for 1942, the yearbook staff that year had already started putting in our boys in uniform pages. And what hit me like a gut punch was the guys, they're 17, 18, and underneath their pictures are their names. And then under one was at Corregidor, one was in the Philippines. And this is like, they didn't know then when they printed it that all those guys are probably dead, like, or are going to die. And there was several of those guys in that yearbook that it listed Philippines, Corregidor. And it really shocked me because it's this little high school down in Weslaco in the Rio Grande Valley, the RGV. And one of the guys in the yearbook, it said beside his name, killed in action Pearl Harbor. And so that got me to thinking about this event that Jeff and I are doing, and I want to get my girls, they're teenagers, into the garb that they wore, the what do you call those, almost like a flight suit, but it's zipped up in the front and
Just a coveralls, I think.
coveralls. So I know that when things were rough there, they didn't have uniforms yet for the nurses that were on Corregidor, and so they were making do with what they had. And a lot of times they were wearing them to coveralls. And so that got me thinking about my girls and trying. I want to really honor, because my daughter Brooke, she wants to be an RN like her mom, and my other daughter Lauren, she wants to go into psychology, so both the medical field. And it got me to thinking about, I don't know, it was just like the tie-in with the yearbook, and here they are. I want them to dress up and honor these nurses and the Bataan and Corregidor. And so that got me to thinking about the movies. So Proudly We Hail with Claudette Colbert. And it's a tremendous movie with Paulette Goddard. And it just shows just the grit, the grime. It gets down into just what they were facing and dealing with. And some are cracking up, and some are holding it together, and they're thinking they're going to get out of there. And when the movie was made, they didn't know. They didn't know if they made it or not, And that hits you at the end from our perspective. It hit me, was like, man, I wonder if these nurses even made it through all those years ahead of them. So that one I really enjoy. So Proudly We Hail. Another one that I really like was, of course, and I've talked about it before, was They Were Expendable. And the only reason I mention it now is because it does have some very touching scenes with Donna Reed, where she is one of the nurses on Corregidor. And when the guys are there, and she's, it's interesting because they show the young men wounded, scared, the Kragadors being just shelled constantly, and bits of tunnel are falling and they're landing on them and they're thinking it's going to crash and they're all going to die. And here are these young guys are looking to their nurses almost like moms, and they're so stoic, right? And they're just so they're keeping it together for the guys under their care. And Donna Reed does an amazing job of that. So that movie has definitely come to mind here recently. So Proudly We Hail. And of course, I mean, Robert Taylor, Batan. I mean, goodness gracious, if you haven't seen that one, it's got a young Ricky Ricardo in there, and he does an excellent job, and it's just such a great, I think that's the first movie I ever saw as a young boy, because when I grew up on military bases, we that military channels, especially like Iceland, you had two channels, and so that was always a war movie on. And you get to see Where Eagles Dare in Technicolor with the crisp color and the cool uniforms and this and that, and you're a kid, and you're just really drawn to that. But as far as substance, that Bataan really is probably one of the first movies that as a kid made me realize, like, these guys stood alone and they did not retreat. They gave not one more inch, and they all knew they were going to die. And you just see these folks that you fall in love with. And that's what I love about it, Don and Jeff, is that the director does such a good job, and the screenwriter, at making you care about these people. And then they take them from you one at a time. And it really makes you feel as much as you can, having not been in combat, but you start losing guys that you care about. And it's done slowly, methodically, like this gigantic Japanese machine that's just grinding you down. And then it just gets down to one guy. And it's just, I highly recommend Bataan with Robert Taylor.
Do you guys, I'll have to check that one out because I'm not seeing it. Do you guys remember the movie that was kind of talked about with Kate Winslet where she was going to be betraying Lee Miller and her kind of biopic?
Yeah, I saw that.
Where was that streaming at? Because I remember I saw lots of talk of it coming out that I never heard anything about, and apparently it came out in 2024. It was produced in 2023, hit the film circuits, apparently did quite well over in the United Kingdom, but I haven't seen it anywhere. Where did
Yeah,
you
I think it's Prime Video.
Amazon Prime? I'll have to check it out because I remember when the it was in pre-production and post-production, some of the photos are coming out, and then I never really heard much about it. I haven't heard whether it was good, bad, indifferent, or
It was
anything.
good. It was good. She does take Kate Winslet. It's freaking amazing in that. Yeah, she really pulls it off.
For those who don't know, Lee Miller was a ex-model and photographer for Vogue who just happened to be over there during the landings, and apparently she was the first photographer ever to catch the first use of napalm in war. She caught the photos of it. But
Yeah.
yeah, so I'll
What's
have
this
to.
book about her? Lee Miller's War.
Yep, so the movie's
Awesome.
called Lee, and Dennis believes it's on Amazon Prime, so I'll have to check that out because I was definitely, it was kind of one of those areas where we were kind of waiting for some more movies to come out, and then people were talking about that. I was like, "Ooh, that looks good," but then it just kind of fell off my radar. So we'll definitely have to check that one out. But I appreciate the suggestion on the other movies. Do you guys have anything before we wrap things up?
Looking forward to seeing you next month, Don. The three of us
I'm
can all
so
be
excited.
together.
I can't believe it's
Yeah.
already January 13th.
I know.
It's been
Yeah.
flying by already. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. I'm going to be doing what I like to call the rock and roll tour stop, where I just come in and just crash on couch to couch, surf around for 3 days, and then do the Irish farewell and get back in the air and gone. But we'll try to get as much done. And I think what we kind of owe to our patrons as well, I think maybe we'll get together one day and try to set some time apart, and we'll record some content that we can chop up and put up on Patreon for the Patreon listeners, because I mean this will be, we're all together and it'll be in the same room in front of the same camera, so we can, and get some cool behind the scenes stuff too.
Yeah.
So, yep. Looking forward to it as well. Not looking forward to the plane trip. I did get a little fancy. I went Delta, boys.
Nice.
Nice. I learned the hard way last October when I went up for my mom's heart surgery, and I took one of those cheap airlines in. And
Like Frontier or
yeah,
something.
Lawn Chair Inc.
Eddie's Airways.
I mean, yeah, they got the plastic molded seats that don't move at all. Being 6'5", I always tell the story, but it bears to be told. Pre 9/11, actually, even post 9/11, I'd say pre 2013, my tall ass gets on the plane. They say, "Hey, you want the bulkhead seat? You're tall. Yeah, right this way." Now it's, "Hey, do you want the bulkhead seat? Yeah, $50." It's like, it's so they just nickel and dime you, and Frontier and the other cheap ones. It's and the main and comfort aside, the main reason I didn't even go with them now. It's like when I went up for my mom's surgery, we had a hurricane coming, and they hadn't quite canceled the flight yet, but I had to make adjustments. And it's like, oh, you couldn't even call. Like, you couldn't even call and talk to anybody. Like, when you called the 800 number, they wanted your manifest number or whatever. And this is all, your flight's not within 24 hours. You can't talk to anybody. It's like, I got a hurricane coming in 2 days. I need to reschedule. I can't be in Kentucky 18 hours before my flight and then get a different flight home. It's like, and I end up buying a second ticket and flying Delta home. And long story short, when it's all said and done, I was able to get a refund. But it's like, when you're in the thick of it, I need to at least be able to talk to somebody on the phone. It was like, and so I went with Delta. So my flight out there should be, I think I have a layover somewhere, but I'm looking forward to getting out of Florida for a while. I had a great time the first time I was in Texas, so looking forward to coming back, and we'll have to get some smoked meat somewhere and just
Oh,
have
yeah,
a
for
good
sure.
time.
We'll get you down the Riverwalk.
There you go. So thank you guys for hanging out with us for the start of another year. Please email us, mailcall@WTSPWorldWar2.com. If you got a topic you want us to talk about, or maybe a topic you think you can contribute to the show, please reach out to us and we'll have you on. Or if you know somebody that we needs to be on, let us know. We happily accommodate them. For myself, Dennis, and Jeff, we'll happily talk to you all in a week.
This has been a Digital 410 production.